All right, we're back for another round of Mr. George Mayfield and our buddy Blake Dial over in Livingston, Alabama. Part two of a two-part series where I got to go over there and sit down in one of the cooler turkey hunting offices I've ever seen in my life. It was a cool experience. We got a couple of videos we're going to have on our social media stuff for y'all to see some things he might have been referencing in our part one episode. We hope you enjoyed it, and if you did, we hope you left a review or a rating or something of that nature, shared it to social, told a friend, something along them lines. We're going to dive in part two real quick, and it's just as good as part one, don't you worry. Got some more stories, more theories and tactics and philosophical kind of tidbits here and there. So going to remind y'all one time real quick right before we hop on in that the new Woodsman Series camouflage bottomland suit we got, the ultralight moisture wicking shirt and button down shirt that is, and the four way stretch active pants. They're set to arrive Thursday. If you pre ordered them at the exclusive pre order event at NWTF convention, they should be shipping out Friday morning. And if you didn't get to catch them there at the pre sale, they will be online at SpringLegion.com. Beginning Friday, March 8th. So if you listen to this after March 8th, head over to springlegion.com, check them out, grab your set. And with that, we're going to dive into part two with Mr. George Mayfield.
No, but I'd have gone broke, you know, if it wasn't for the 2 years.
But you mentioned earlier, I think it was before we press record, mentioning, you know, kind of the displaying of turkeys and just biology of it, and it's a point that it's so easy to understand. It's not as easy to comprehend, but it's hard to put into words. You know, getting around it, it's difficult to grasp something so complicated and simplify it down into, you know, the stage like you mentioned. And I mean, just the point of spring woods, kind of how they playing out and being a lot of folks, and I've been one of them, I'll be guilty of it. And I remember the day I realized I'm in the wrong spot. I'm in too good of a spot. Get back a little bit. Let him have the stage, as you mentioned. Just mm-hmm. elaborate on that mm-hmm. a little bit. And
sure, you know, everybody that hunts, you know, I mean, from the very beginning, you're learning, mm-hmm. and you start recognizing these things. You might you may never verbalize it or have a name for it, but you understand it. And the stage is a concept. I mean, a turkey has evolved to, it's a competitive situation for gobblers. You know, back in the day, I don't know if you've ever read some of the original literature by Bertram and his travels across the Southeast, you know, I mean, before there was an America. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, in explorer days, Europeans first spent time over here trying to figure out what this, you know, this land was all about. Well, they talked about, or Bertram wrote about, how in the spring that it was almost like deafening the goblin in certain places. Wasn't everywhere, but in certain places the goblin was so intense and lasted so long in the morning and you couldn't hear. Mm-hmm. And I've heard a few times in Texas, you know, relative to what I have experienced, it was kind of like that. I'm sure it wasn't like what Bertram, you know, experienced, but, in those situations, it's competitive. And I think, you know, and I'm just going to throw this up, and people can bat it back at me if they want to. I don't know. I admit that up front. But have you ever wondered about shot gobbling? Why they gobble at a door slamming or a crow? Or, you know, they ain't mad at no crow. It's just a noise that stimulates them to gobble. Well, I think that has something to do with their evolution in groups. I mean, turkeys are more successful in groups. They're social animals, and they evolve with that. And but when it comes to reproducing, it's competitive. And the one that gobbles the most and the hardest and displays, you know, where the hens can choose, prefers his display or whatever. Who knows what women thinking, but I'm old school, man. But ultimately in turkeys, the female chooses who she's going to squat for. Okay. And, so he's out there doing his thing, showing out. Well, when he's got all these colors on his head, I mean, like a chameleon changes colors. How beautiful is a strutting turkey? I mean, it's gorgeous. You know, the sun hits it just so, and the iridescence, I mean, now it's like a neon sign. Well, that impressed me. It has impressed me. Well, the hen, for whatever she's looking for, of course, she's attracted or not attracted. And, you know, the gobbler, to be effective, has to be seen. And for him to be seen, he's got to get in a place where he can be seen. You know, he's not in a briar thicket in a ditch. He's over there on the rise that we were, you know, a prominence, high ground. I always call it the high ground. And where he can see. But more importantly, at that time, he's to be seen. You see? And, I mean, that's why actors act on a stage. They're bigger than life.
Yeah.
You know? You get up on, you know, everybody looking up at them. Well, same with the turkey. So he's up there doing his thing and trying to compete and trying to ward off other, you know, outdo the other males and all. Well, it's natural for us as hunters, as predators, to be attracted to the stage. In other words, we can kind of tell where that is. That's pretty cool. I saw a turkey up there the other day. Well, and I did it for years. Didn't know what I was doing wrong. But when I would choose a place to sit, damn if I wouldn't sit right in the middle of the stage. I mean, it was hell. I could see,
you know, wide open.
Yeah, but so did turkey see us up there too. You know, I mean, they used to come up to my calling because they were curious what that was. But I mean, you know, but they would. They. That's not natural,
right?
For a hen to assume the stage and go to raising cane. Hens don't do that. I don't know, when I learned to shut up and be quiet and listen more than I called, a hen's looking for a gobbler. He's over there gobbling on his stage or wherever he's gobbling from, a pasture edge or something like that. She's going to him. She's pecking and scratching along and going to him. I've seen some run to him, yeah. You know, right after fly down, they'll break into a run, but this old coy hen come by, and I've seen it. I witnessed it, and I've been close enough to hear it. And there's not a lot said on the hen's part. I mean, that's probably not more than a 3 to 5 note yelp at most in this medium, low-level volume.
That's it.
And she's... That's what happened on that hunt with Mason and all. I told him exactly what was going to happen. I said, and we had it happen. A hen came and flew the slough. I heard the wing beats. Flew the slough. And I know I'm jumping around here, but this is an experience that we had talked about earlier. And came through there looking for that gobbler. And she probably called 3 times. And 1 time was a what. It was, and then 1 time it was, you know, and she went right through, and he wasn't there. But she came through looking for it. That's exactly what she was doing. And had he not already run up on me, you know, and I didn't have a gun, but I mean, had he not done that, he would have been there probably or in within earshot of her, and they would have hooked up right there somewhere around that spot where my friend Mason was wanting to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's about it. Why? Why don't they raise cane? I've heard them fly down and they, you know, they're yipping. Well, it's different when they're all grouped together, and the hens are competitive too, and there's a peck order among the hens, and one out tries to yip the other one, and they're not looking to breed a gobbler.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they want to raise hell and where other hens could hear? That's competition for her. They're going to go through where they know these gobblers to be, and they're going to be kind of quiet about
subtle about it.
Yeah.
They might be moving fast, but they'll as they're going, they're looking, and then they'll.
That's right. That's it. And so that's how they hook up with those gobblers, and the gobbler might not say a word. Mm-hmm. He might just start drumming.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. You know? And they hook up.
Yep.
But
more times
so,
than
I
enough.
Mean, yeah, I know. And so there's so much going on, and you just have to when you that patience thing we were talking about. It's what patience is a firm belief in yourself that you know what the hell's going on.
That it's going to have a positive outcome.
Yeah.
No matter how long you're
exactly.
there for.
You're going to sit there until it does.
Yep.
That's what patience is. If you don't know, you can't sit there. Because it's sort of like.
You can, but you won't.
Well, you won't. Right. No, you won't do it.
Yeah.
You will get up and go looking for one or try to make one gobble. I mean, I've done it. But that's not how you kill them. Not. It's really not. I mean, you can get on some. You got a bunch of two-year-olds, and you can do it a lot. But if it's not how I kill them. Mm-hmm. I'll put it that way. That's what I should say. You can kill a turkey anyway.
We would go, and we would start whenever I was in high school, and we'd start at a spot, that one in particular turkey on top of the gas line that morning. That was one. I learned more lessons that morning than I could have ever learned. But we would start in a spot. And if you had never been hunting with him, especially at his experience now, then it would drive you crazy because you would maybe take two or three steps in an hour and you sit. I'm not kidding you.
I got tired. Yeah, and, two steps.
Well, it wasn't that. He knew the turkey was there, and he was just waiting on him to make a move. That in itself, that morning we set up, we got in there. You had heard the turkey gobble. I was sitting down at the bottom. You were at the top.
I knew he was there.
Mm-hmm.
He had been there, and I'd been hunting this turkey, and I had been struggling. I'd hit him from three or four different areas, and he was like, well, what about this? He told me an approach, and I was like, you know, I've never thought about that. Mm-hmm. So we tried it that morning, and then we finally got in there where he was, which really wasn't that far from the truck.
It took a while to get in there right, though. Yeah. If we charged over there, I wouldn't have had the confidence to believe he was still in there.
Yeah.
In other words, if you just march up on that Piney Hill, open in there, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's where he was.
He lived up there. Mm-hmm. And if we didn't get in there right, stay low. Keeping the shadows.
Went around the backside.
Around, you know. I mean, if we hadn't have done it right, he'd have never come.
Not at all.
And I can't do that. I can't go busting up in there and without being convinced that I done screwed it up before I ever got there and before I ever said a word. But when we got to where we wanted to be, up on top of that Piney Ridge, real pretty open in there, see everything you need to see.
Break of the hill was about 15 yards, I guess, 20
got
yards.
Got up right there where we had a – y'all, when you sit to a turkey, here's something I totally know and believe, and you always try to put something between you and where you think he's going to come.
Mm-hmm. some barrier.
Because if you don't, what's going to happen? He going to stand out there and look and say, hmm.
Get a good picture of him.
Where is that hen? Yeah. Well, I don't. If you're a good caller, you're going to think, well, yeah, there's a hen, but I don't see her. And, I mean, you want him to, when you see that turkey, you want him to be in gun range. Not standing out there at 80 yards looking for you. You know, 90% of the people, when they get kind of further along with their turkey hunting, that's where they mess up. And when, you've got to sit in the right place to kill him. You might call him up, but you won't kill him. That's what he's telling me. And unless you, when you learn to see it right to a turkey, you'll kill him. But if you don't, you might call him up, but you ain't gonna kill him.
He'll be out there 70 yards.
I know.
That morning we wrapped up around there and we got to the top of the hill. And by the time we got there, it was 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not kidding. We started at daylight. By the time we got there, it may have been 200 yards, but we got there.
It was a pretty good way.
Yeah. I mean, it was a good. It's further than I'm sitting here making it seem like, but it wasn't that far.
Right.
I mean, you could have gotten there in 10 minutes walking straight.
Yeah, and we got up there, and we got to the edge of the hill, and then we're sitting there. We're listening. This turkey had not gobbled all morning long. We gobbled about twice on the limb, and we got up there top of that hill. Obviously, I'm almost bored at this point.
Oh, yeah. He thinks I'm crazy.
And,
it's okay.
We're sitting there, and we walk up there, and he's like, you hear that? He said, there's a turkey scratching down there at the bottom of that hill. And you could just hear it. I mean, it almost like the rustle of a squirrel. I mean, it was noise, though, and it was dang sure something making the noise. So
sound like a turkey to me.
Yeah. Well, and that's where the turkey had gone, was down in there. So
he hadn't gone anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Just wasn't gobbling.
Nowhere. I mean, he ain't gone anywhere in that amount of time. And we got there, and we sat down, and Mr. George scratched in the leaves, and just a couple very subtle turkey sounds,
because
there wasn't any turkey sounds going on in the woods, so he was quiet. And we sat there, I guess an hour went by, and we were ready, you know, at first, and then we got to conversating, and next thing I know, we're both on our elbows leaning over on the side of the tree. Well, lo and behold, you know, at the worst time possible, the turkey, we hear something, and I look over, I said, oh, God, there he is, and looking just like that at me. I mean,
scoping you.
By the time he got up there, he'd seen us, and he turned around and wheeled, and obviously I shoot down through the bushes at the turkey.
Didn't cut
a feather, and he just kind of looked at me, and he was like, well, I'm not going to say what he said. But
I don't remember what I said, but I probably wasn't nice about that. Yeah, but,
that was a screw-up, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
And he just said, well,
I felt like shooting at him was the screw up.
Probably so, but I had gotten there, and that's what he just kind of looked at me. He shook his head. He said, "Well, did you hear his spurs clanking together when he was running down the hill?" Like,
that'll make it better.
Oh yeah, I was like, "Golly!" Well, and that was one turkey. That was one turkey I know for a fact that I never killed. I don't know if anybody ever killed
it. And I promise you, I never looked at that turkey's feet, okay? But based on how that turkey responded that morning and based on all the information that I'd gotten, that was one hell of a turkey.
It was.
And I'll never know for sure, neither will you, but we did call him up.
Absolutely.
And I think Blake got over another hump that morning with – how effective that is. They don't wear a Rolex. The smart ones, the ones that are learned, they ain't no hurry. And you can't be either. I mean, if you are, then you're going to end up back at the truck without one a lot more than somebody that is willing to take his time and let the turkey be the turkey and do what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. Old turkeys just don't get in a hurry to do nothing.
Mm-mm.
Now, I alluded to this earlier, and I'm going to go away. We'll jump into this thing. You know, I've gotten about where if I don't know a turkey, I mean, I don't misunderstand me, and I just – I want to hunt a turkey I know. If I had my choice, I'd take one that way than a, rather than 100 the other way, just shooting them when they run up there. But it's just something about the experience and having a relationship with a turkey over time and getting beat. Makes it so sweet mm-hmm. when you kill one like that. And it's a sad gladness, relief kind of, but it's not all high five and rolling in the straw when you kill one that you know so good. I promise you.
Was it oddly quiet for the first time in a long time, it feels like.
It's like, what am I going to do tomorrow?
Right.
You know? I mean, I didn't kill my, he ain't my friend, but he damn sure wasn't my enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But I did hate him. But
we look forward to seeing him the next day.
But I loved hearing him.
Mm-hmm. Well, knowing that he's there.
I know. And so, you know, as a turkey hunter, you got so many mixed emotions, you know, that's tied up in this bird. And, I tell you what it is. It's not near as much fun when you don't have one. I didn't have one last year. I know I've said it more than once, but I enjoyed my turkey season, but it wasn't like it was before. That turkey in there on that mannequin, that was him, the one that I hunted about 6 years, you know. That's a grown turkey, you know. But
he didn't have the one last year, and that was, I know, got to be the first year, and this will be 20 years now, me and Mr. George have been hunting turkeys, that he did not specifically have a turkey that he was trying to kill. And that's the God's honest truth.
Yeah.
He always had one. He either had it named or he knew where it was,
yeah.
You know, whatever, but still and well, he knew the turkey. Mm-hmm. And
I don't like, you know, having them named. I mean, that's a good example of having a relationship with a turkey, but it's almost gotten to be like with the deer hunters and stuff, having them all named.
Yeah.
It almost cheapens them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
They can come up with some better names. That's
yeah,
sure.
I'm telling you. You know, I don't want to do the turkey like that because there's nothing cheap about them.
You went down there and you killed that turkey. And I had talked to you on the phone that morning after it happened. And I'd come down there and I saw you. But you had sat down there on the ditch in the silence and you
had, oh, I did. I did.
And I think you were kind of getting to, you know, the point after that you've killed him, and now you have to sit here and think about, well, how much time, you know, or how.
Well, you know, it takes years to have a relationship with turkeys.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it's a series of events that you can't, you know, you can't make it all happen. It just either happens or it doesn't. And, that particular turkey, you know, I told you some of the story or maybe all of it, but there was three gobblers as 2 or 3 year olds. And I called them up right on, and it's a property line involved in it. And that's really what kept the turkey alive as long as it was. He had enough sense to pack up and move off. But after
I'll keep him alive.
After I killed his... The first one, it was three of them run up there, you
mm-hmm.
know, run up in the road right there, and I dusted one, you know, and they all hopped around and putted and finally flew off, you know, and scared, you know. And the next year, I think I took somebody in there, and there was two of them gobbling right there, and this place, isn't that area of this place isn't loaded with turkeys, and it should be, but it never has been. There's always like 3 or 4 in there, and that's it. And my buddy killed one. And yipped him up, and there was two of them standing right there, and boom, you know, another one went,
Oh, yeah.
He took off. Well, you'd think the turkey would learn. And I took Tracy in there. Mm-hmm. And we went in there in black dark, and right on the property line, and... the turkey was roosted within 80 yards of us. He was drumming in the tree for like. And I did a fly down with my wing and all that. And Turkey flew down in the road and run up there. And my buddy Tracy shot him down with this 10 gauge. And, I didn't have a gun. And I took Buster back in and my dog, and we looked for half a day for this turkey. Mm-hmm. I knew he was a pretty good turkey, mm-hmm. It's probably 5 year old turkey mm-hmm. at the time, 4 or 5 year old. Figured he had some pretty good hooks. And I wanted to get Tracy gone, actually. Get the turkey. Here you go. See you next year, kind of thing. Be honest with you, so I could go hunting. But we looked and looked and looked for this turkey, and Buster never did find him. Buster can find a turkey now. Hmm. And my old lab, chocolate lab. So next year, when I was listening in there, I didn't hear a turkey right where they were, but I did hear a turkey back toward the railroad track way off down in there. Never heard a turkey down in there before that far. Mm. And it turned out to be him.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't gobble a lot. And
I wouldn't either.
he just mm-hmm. didn't. And anyway, what I did have was hens, especially early in the season. And he would venture his way back from that railroad track up in there pretty tight. And but he never committed, and he never come over there across the line or anywhere near that line, really. Said about there was a hickory ridge out through there it was obvious you could see a good spot, mm-hmm. and that's where he would stay, and he would gobble when he felt like gobbling, but he didn't come up in there in those pines, the pine plantation mm-hmm. That I had. And but the hens loved it. They thinned it. 18, 20-year-old, mm-hmm. thin pines, just perfect nesting habitat. And they stayed up in there, and it rocked on. And we played cat and mouse around that, up and down that property line. And it was just one morning that I was on the other side of the place almost, and I heard a turkey gobble back that way. For me to hear him where he was, he had to be on me. And I said, that's him. Mm-hmm.
The one.
That's my turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And it was toward the end of the season, just before I went to Missouri. And sure enough, it was him. And I thought I heard, I had a golf cart, and I went a part way, but I didn't dare ride that golf cart down up in there. I can't walk that fast anymore, but I'm kind of crippled, But anyway, I eased on in there, and I had to cross a big old open lane along that edge over there. And when I was approaching it, I saw a hen out there. And I just got a glimpse of a hen. And I said, he's probably with that hen or been with that hen. Because I knew he was out there on me at one point when I heard him gobble. And so I stayed a long time, longer than I probably should have, without crossing. And finally I just said, to hell with it. I'm going to have to cross this to get where I want to get. Yeah. I'm going to have any chance to get up in there and call this turkey up. And I might bump him. And I did, like we were talking about before, I did not want to go in there without complete confidence that I'd gotten in there without being seen. Mm-hmm. That's very important to me. I mean, you screw it up before you ever start.
Right. Yeah.
And then when you do that, and you it's like showing your hands at the poker table. Mm-hmm. It's like, do I have a winning hand? When you start yelping, and he puts it together, and you'll never call him up.
It's your last hope.
Look, if you don't believe that, you better. Mm-hmm. If you think they can't remember what you sound like, how the hell do they know a hen?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If they can't recognize voices, how does a gobbler make the other gobbler stay away with just gobbling? Mm-hmm. They recognize other turkeys, and their voices are unique. Don't ever doubt that.
Mm-mm.
I know it to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And if true. if you give him a look at your hand, you will never kill him.
Yeah.
Not that way.
Not that way.
Himself. Not with that with rubber or slate or whatever you're using. Don't do that. And I have learned the hard way. This when I'm dealing with a turkey like that, I don't use alcohol. And because maybe I'm not good enough, but I've called up a bunch of them with a mouth call, but I think they can imprint, they can hear mm-hmm. that better than they, a slate. I can trick them with a slate. Mm-hmm. I can trick, most all my old turkeys have with been killed with slate a slate.
Yeah.
And that's the way I do it.
Most, mm-hmm.
But I got across that opening, and I stood there a long time. Blake had gone crazy.
Blake's like Chase. Chase would get mad at me. I'll stand there for 10 minutes waiting on a cloud to cover it before
You've seen old Buck do it.
Oh, yeah.
He might turn his head a little bit, but he'll stand there till your eyes water.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have gone crazy now, but that probably
back then I would have gone
crazy. Maybe you would.
Until that lane has a shadow on it, I ain't walking through it, and I'll stand there until front pushes through.
What you got to do. I mean, to satisfy myself, hell, they was going to be over there. I had to make a move. Mm-hmm. I went on across. In a pine plantation, it's hard to find a unique spot. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Analysis paralysis before, too. Yeah, you're trying to pick the perfect identical pine tree.
I mean, it's like, I don't like this. I sat down mm-hmm. twice, but it's hipped up. And trees are planted on the hip. Still is wet. That's a wet place. And I wasn't satisfied. So I went on up. Just kept pressing. But I knew I had been enough time and I knew he wasn't going to stay over there on my side.
Yeah.
I knew which way. And the one time when I was headed that way, I thought I heard him gobble, and it sounded to me like, and when you think you heard one, you probably did.
Yeah, 95% of the time.
And it sounded like he gobbled away from me.
So he's now,
that was the only clue I had. And I went with it and took a chance and kept moving up. And I got about 140 yards from the line. And I was running parallel to the rows of the pine trees. And it hadn't been that long before, maybe 3 or 4 years, when they did that select cut. So you had an open lane and then two lanes of trees, and there was a green field out there, that corner. And I thought, yeah, that son of a gun ain't coming through that damn green field. Ain't no way in hell. He's going to come right through these woods if he comes at all. But I couldn't tear myself away from sitting at least within gun range of that green field. But I sat in the woods off the far corner, gun range to the corner, in the part of the field, but mostly those alleys I had down through there toward where I heard him last gobble, I thought I did. And I don't do this very often, but I covered up. I got the limbs and straw, and I'm sitting up on a hip on a pine tree about that big, mm-hmm. which ain't shit. And but I pulled all this stuff up around me, and I hid. I got some limbs and kind of laid them up on me, and I put pine straw all over me, and I got into a kill position long before. I didn't sit there with my gun in my lap, I promise you.
Yeah.
And before I ever said a word. And I got my slate out, and I don't remember exactly what I said, but it wasn't much. It was just like, I'm over here.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm over here. That's about it. And I got in the gun.
Yeah.
Waiting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, I ain't kidding now. I'm in the gun. Now, you can feel sitting here with like this or this. I'm sitting there with my gun on my knee, pointed straight down that alley, and I'm cutting my eyes from right to left. I ain't turning my head. I know who I'm with.
You can feel his presence, too. You knew
him. I knew he was there. I knew he was there. I mean, I really did. I don't know how to explain that without sounding like bullshit, but
I've been there.
I trusted him. He was there. And I sat there, and I sat there, and I sat there. Man, I got my ass wet. I mean, that water's soaking up. Mosquitoes, good God almighty. And it was cloudy. It was kind of darkish anyway. Nothing. I swear, he got one. I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
My hands were shaking, man. I didn't know what to say.
I don't know. What do you say to that? I mean,
I didn't, honestly. I mean, my hands were shaking. I don't know if I could have yelped at him or not, but I mean, I didn't know what to say. And in that state, I didn't do anything. So I didn't. I didn't do anything. Except I really started staring down. I mean, he gobbled straight out in front of me right where I said he was going to come. And, I mean, you know, I could see 60, 70 yards in them pines straight down that alley. And I sat there, and I sat there, and I sat there. And I'm, you know, nothing. And I am starting to wander with my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can believe this part or not. The first thing I knew that told me that turkey was within gun range was a putt.
Mm.
like hitting an anvil with a ball peen hammer.
Mm-hmm.
The way it ran up my spine. He saw me.
All hidden, all covered up.
No kidding. He saw me. With mossy oak and all.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hidden.
Yeah.
I swear I was hidden. Best I could hide. I mean, I didn't crawl, you know. I mean, he had come down the edge of that field. I never saw him move. The picket fence didn't work. I saw no movement, and he was standing in the corner looking, and it was thick as hell right there. I could see his head. I cut my eyes, thank Lord. If I'd have moved anything, he would have flown. Mm-hmm. All right? He had looked in there, and he saw me 40 yards from that corner and putted. Now, I'm talking about, I mean, honest to God, it wasn't no cluck. It was a putt. And I'm in the gun looking this way, and it's about about 30-degree angle from where my gun's pointed and where he is. He turned and started going dead away, had no shot, and he stepped. If he'd have stepped the other way, I would have never killed him. He stepped one step to the left, shot him in the back of the head at about 45 yards.
Mm.
Just that quick. I did do that right. But how that turkey saw me under those conditions, I mean, I don't know. I'll never know. But
I guess it's not your place.
don't ever think that. Now, don't ever think they can't pick you out. Because that's probably the most effort I ever put into hiding from one. And he just walked up there and putted it. And I mean, I, you know,
oh, man. Rude about it.
If that doesn't I don't reach in inside of you just tell you how deficient you are in so many different ways, then you just won't ever know. They have the advantage. If there's not all of them, some of them are just like us, just dumb as dirt. Don't know no better. Can't do right if they tried. I mean, I've had them standing at the truck before, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, just dumb. but this one wasn't. And that is, when you go there and you have those kind of experiences with turkeys, you have climbed the mountain.
How many years, I don't think you mentioned, how many years it was between the time Tracy shot the turkey, the 3 or 4 year old turkey, to the time that you harvested the turkey?
I want to say it was like five or six years. And the reason I know it was that turkey, I got to tell this. I don't like cleaning turkeys. I mean, people say what they want to, you know. I got where I just don't like doing it. And it doesn't have anything to do with the smell or the blood or anything like that. It's almost, I don't know, it's like it's almost disrespectful now to take, rip one apart. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how to explain that. I end up putting them in the freezer. I don't need another turkey mounted, you know. But I just don't like doing it. But when I did get around to cleaning this turkey, sure enough, I'd kind of forgotten about that part. But Tracy shot him down with the shells I gave him and a 10 gauge, and it was copper plated fours back in the day. And that's what the turkey had in the left side of his leg.
Some copper plated number fours.
I mean, it was within where Tracy shot the turkey, was in the mouth of that road going down to that green field, which wasn't 100 yards from where I killed the turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't probably another 150 yards where both of his brothers were killed.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's a long story, but that's the epitome of what turkey hunting has evolved to mean to me. It don't get better than that.
No.
Now, I've had some hunts that were completely different, but they were every bit as satisfying and interesting. Dan Grenan and I had one that was as, I've never been able to write about it. It was so good. Everything I've written about it didn't do it justice. Mm-hmm. It's one of the few hunts I've never successfully written about. But a man that owns as much land as Dan Grenan, when he stood up, I didn't have a gun that day, but when he stood up from that hunt, he staggered around and didn't know which way the truck was. And I didn't either. Now, that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how involved. That's how involved we were in that hunt.
Yeah,
we
were. I mean, it was like I was messed up. Now that's the truth. Now Dan will tell you. Mm-hmm. You bank with him.
I'm gonna have to
ask him about that morning.
I will.
That was the damnedest hunt I've ever been on, I believe, and I was with somebody. Didn't have a gun, but I'll never forget that experience. And I'll just tell you briefly about what transpired that morning. I'd called one of those turkeys up for Alex, and I knew it was old turkey when I did it. But I put him up there, and he boogered it. Turkey did that periscope right on the break. I sent him up there to the break. I could hear the turkey coming up the hill. I tried to whisper to him, but he didn't hear me. And anyway, he was pointing this way. Turkey popped his head up over here, and turkey flew. And I tricked his ass. I yipped him up. Boy, he come on up that hill, too. But he was gobbling like 10 o'clock in the morning, still on the roost.
Mm.
This is an old turkey. And there was another turkey back toward the county road over there that always teased everybody who was strutting behind this antebellum home that nobody lived in anymore. And everybody seen him. People were, not to worry about people poaching around in there. Then, you know, it's just not like that. But anyway, Dan, that was one. I had tried to call that turkey one morning. He decided to gobble and hushed him with a mouth call. That son of a gun went, he went silent on me. And Dan was with me. And I was trying to guide, you know. And went down, finally the turkey gobbled, you know. I mean, we'd been trying to get on him.
Yeah.
He didn't gobble regular. He was an old turkey, too. Been strutting behind that house for years. And I put my best springtime yip on his, and he went, whoop. Never said another word. Dan, I said, I forget exactly what I said, but Dan probably remembers. And then, I shut him up. But those two turkeys, they lived about half a mile apart. And a big old power line went through there, and that was kind of the dividing line.
Yeah.
And they met up behind that old house one morning, late in the season. And I was in the middle.
In the middle.
Honestly. It was two old maniacs that had just, they had lost it. And it was like, wow, wow. And they were just, I mean, I don't know how long Dan
shoot.
Oh, ready to shoot. He'd face this way while, and he'd face that way. You know? I mean, but anyway, I'm going to let him tell you the story, and then I'll tell you my version of it.
I'll ask him tomorrow when I go up.
Well,
there.
Do. I guarantee you won't miss a chance to tell it. But, you know, I've been blessed, and I know we don't have, you know, forever to talk about all this, and we'll talk again, but I've been blessed to have more or less grown up doing something I never dreamed I'd get to do. I learned about a bird that I didn't know nothing about. You know, we were talking earlier about how you, when you start, you as a young man, you got all these physical abilities, but you're running a little short on wisdom and knowledge. I don't care how many years you went to college, you still don't know about the wild turkey until you sit to his ass and sit to 1,000 of them. And, at some point in time, you peek out physically and you kind of reach that same level intellectually. You understand enough about him, you know, about equals to your physical ability. And then you get a point of diminishing returns on the physical side. You might keep learning, but you can't get there fast enough, close enough to learn like you used to. So your learning doesn't stop, but it doesn't really accelerate. The rate of increase isn't that great. And you might even miss a few mornings. But physically, you're going downhill, and it is an exponential decrease in capability. It's not arithmetic. It's exponential as you decline physically. You know, you don't really increase on the other side. And right about that point, when you're really maxed out and going to be all you're going to be, it lasts 3 or 4 or 5 years maybe. You start having these feelings like, well, you want to share it with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, you want to, hey boy, you want to go hunting in the morning?
Yeah.
You know, and you're talking about somebody that might have killed one or two, you know, you want to share it. You want to start passing it on. Mm-hmm. You want to somebody, but you're not just anybody. You want somebody that's got that burn, got that desire, that need to, a want to.
Mm-hmm.
And when you find them, then it's like, it's better than hunting.
Oh, yeah. Well, whenever you take that kind of person or you go, well, for me, Sean Daly, he's my guy, you know, and mm-hmm. he's not far from the same age as us, but whenever I met him, he was a teenager and I was at Mississippi State. Mm-hmm. And it's just a good story talking about passing it on. He had never killed but just a few turkeys, and we had a really good hunt. And it just, we've been hunting together ever since the day that we met. And mm-hmm. now it's really, you know, it's turned into a great friendship. But better yet, we learn from each other.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about the turkeys that we hunt in different areas and what's going on. And he's become really, really good at it. And I didn't ever understand all of that. You know, the pass it on side of things, he pressed that super mm-hmm. hard, you know, and how important it was. Which he had, you know, obviously he had a mentor, the greatest it, to him, you know, and man, probably to a lot of people, but
yeah,
the king.
The king, the king. I didn't name him that. The community named him that. And they named him some other things too. But he, I tell you what, there wasn't anybody in that area that rivaled him.
Yeah, really?
And no. Mm-mm. Ever. And he was the king. And I was blessed to have been accepted. The only other person that he mentored besides his son, Little Ben, was his son-in-law, Johnny. And Johnny turkey hunts, but he never really got into it like, you know, we did. Little Ben, he's still a good friend, and always been. And he's not as mad at him as his daddy was, but he's a damn good turkey hunter. Oh, so, but having that relationship with Ben Ezell was really, without that, I don't think I would have ever pursued or achieved the level in the sport that I did. I mean, he's the one that took me out of state first, showed me that, hey, boy, season's open for a long mm-hmm. time after it shuts down in Alabama. And he was the one that vouched for me to judge all those contests and world championships. I don't know, I ended up being judging 10 or 12 world championships, you know, mm-hmm. and all that. So, but Ben was the one that spoke for me and got me in. He's the one that took me to Bill, Missouri up there, you know, Mr. Bill's. So that's when old Stevie Stokes and, you know, Press, all those guys were there. Everybody that was in the industry back then was there.
At turkey camp.
Man. And I ended up being asked to run the whole dang camp. So, and I did for mm-hmm. about 20 years. I was took my guides up there and ran the camp. So, Don Shipp, Shockey, all those guys. Man, it was a good time. Walter Parrott, he was winning then. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was took Preston up there and I forget what he said, but it was funny, you know. But anyway, I have been blessed, and I, you know, any way I can help anybody, you know, that's why I do this. My nature is just kind of hole up, and, you know, be quiet and shut up and sit down, listen for a turkey to gobble. Mm-hmm. But I think it's my responsibility to partake in this. And,
no doubt.
You know, I support Blake, you know, 100%. He's got it going on now.
I appreciate that.
I mean, you do. He's hell now. You know, if you want your turkey killed, you call him up. Mm-hmm. If you don't say a word.
Well, the only way that I know that he truly accepted me was taking me up there to that Missouri camp.
Really?
And been up there several times. And,
yeah, that's...
And got to guide some of Mr. Bill's clients and had success.
Ran the table. Ran the table. You run the table.
It's pretty good. We had...
You got it going on. And that's how I got the job up there, you know, doing that in my day. And Blake, I mean, you know, if you invite people, Mr. Bill never charged a dime for anybody to hunt up there, but he had 10,000 acres is the best turkey hunting I ever experienced in my life. And people, CEO of Bristol Myers Squibb, people like that, you know, were up there.
Big money guys.
And I'm, I mean, real, you know, heavy hitters. World's largest dairy conglomerate, you know, CEO of that. Serious business. And when they entrust your their clients or their partners or whatever with you for a morning, they would really like for you to be successful.
Yeah.
For sure.
And so those that could do it, you know, they it doesn't take long for them to rise to the top. And, I mean, you know, you can be the best turkey hunter in the world if you don't have no turkeys. How are you going to prove it?
And, hard to do.
Mr. Bill had the turkeys. And that gave me a platform from which to operate from. And, again, I was blessed to have met them. And I'm still, you know, I'm one of the old guys now. I preferred being Opie. <You know? laughs> But now, hell, I'm oatmeal. I don't know what I am, but, you know, I'm
still
old.
Up there every year, though, come but the same time, you know.
Now I go, and I got to carry Mr. Bill's grandson, his son.
That's
think
cool.
About that.
Wow.
You know, and kill him a turkey and that kind of stuff. So, the my mentors have all passed that were up there. The ones that, you know, that I don't know how to, I'll never be able to pay those folks back for all they gave me, but I'm trying. It's my time, and I'm going to be up there every year. I go up there for the people now more than the turkeys, and they got plenty of turkeys, but it's not the turkeys that make me want to be there.
Yeah.
You know, and, but
it's great. Yeah. The camp house is awesome. Analytica cell phone service. The only phone you can talk from there is an old spin phone.
Oh, yeah.
You got to get up
there
and get on it if you got to talk to your wife. So,
and we have some good times sitting on the bed in there talking, don't
we? Oh, man. I mean, it's just the cool. You can feel you can feel the history inside that building. I mean, it's insane.
I've got pictures of some of his first days when he – well, it wasn't his first days, but – it was at the beginning when everybody wore World War II camo and painted their face. Turkey hunting. I got pictures of that. I'm long before
Mossy Oak.
86 and Mossy Oak and before Crumley and Tree Bark and all that stuff. I'm talking about, you know, stuff that the 60s, early 60s. So, and they were they had a camp. It was going on then, right after the Missouri first opened its season, and they had turkey camp up there, and it's been going on ever since. And I'm going to tell you now, I've been around this country a lot, not like some maybe, but a lot. And you think about it, I mean, how many turkey camps that are legitimate camps where multiple turkey hunters go and share information, and I mean, there's not many turkey camps.
No,
you know, turkey hunters are like a bunch of damn coyotes. Yeah. They don't, you know, they might pack up a little while, but that's at the party, you know. That'd be a hot dough around there. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? But that when day breaks, they all separated.
Yeah.
You know? One howling over here, one, you know, or howling or whatever you want to call it. But turkey hunters naturally don't get together.
Yeah.
They might have a friend or two, but that's it. And but this is an honest-to-God camp, like a deer camp, where people get together every day, and the same people come, and they share information and try to, you know, you didn't kill one, you know, we try to get you one, you know, that kind of stuff. You don't see that.
Mm-mm.
But that's one in Kaboo, Missouri, the Honeycutts. Mr. Bill Honeycutt and his grandson Drew, and fine people. I'll be there as long as they let me. And, you know, I'm blessed to be there.
Shoot, yeah. Well, we're going to start running out of battery here soon.
Well.
Yeah, I got another battery somewhere. We're going to dig around and find it.
Well, but, maybe, I'm about to run out of juice myself.
Well, I know for a fact the folks who listen to this got a lot from it, and you've in fact passed a lot on, and this is going to be very appreciated, and I'm sure that the folks who are listening to it, a lot of either agreeing with it or they jotting it down, or they've got a mindset now they might not have had at the beginning, you know. Yep. And if nothing more, and a deeper appreciation, and you know, just a different mindset towards some of the stuff that they've probably heard me ramble about a little bit. And you know, I mean I get it from folks like this, you know. It's just, it gets passed down. It's not a YouTube video on this necessarily. You gotta sit down and you gotta learn, you gotta get in the woods and mess it up and come back, and someone who is much better than me had the same problem and he fixed it. How did he fix it? You know, yeah. Something like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. So but undoubtedly a lot of value, and very humbled and very appreciative for you to the hospitality for me to just come up in here with a rig and plug it up and be able to capture some of it means a whole lot.
I have to come back. Jeez, I mean, there's a lot more where that came from.
Absolutely. We sure will. Yeah. But Mr. George, Blake, definitely appreciate y'all hopping on. And for our listeners, we appreciate y'all listening to the Spring Legion podcast. We'll see y'all some other time.
Yeah. All right, honey. Thanks for coming.
Yes, sir.